The reason parents didn't trust Barney the Dinosaur is that he had no sense of humor and he never winked at them. Kids loved Barney. Parents, Barney gave him the creeps. I love you,
you love me. From KUER and PRX, this is Preach, a show about the messiness of faith. I'm Lee Hale. This is part two of our deep dive into VeggieTales and the story of two nerdy guys from a Bible college puppet team who created a Christian media empire. If you haven't listened to part one yet, go do that first and then come back. We'll get to Barney and how that pesky purple dinosaur plays into the story in a little bit. But first, let's remember where we left Phil Vischer and Mike Naraki, better known to countless millennials as Bob the Tomato
and Larry the Cucumber.
Things were going great. They were making millions selling VeggieTales videos and merch. Their unique blend of Bible stories and silly songs were a staple of the TV diet for lots of kids in the 90s. Cara Bettis was one of those kids. As the daughter of a pastor, she grew up watching the original cartoons with her siblings. I asked if she considers herself more of a Bob or Larry.
Probably more like bossy Bob. I would have loved to be a mischievous troublemaker like Larry, but, you know, I'm the oldest sibling, so just relating to the bossiness of just wanting things in order all the time.
And that purpose...
Hey, Bob! Have you seen my plastic wind-up lobster?
Not now.
Now, Kara is an editor for the magazine Christianity Today. She says the rise of VeggieTales in the 90s changed the game for religious media.
Christian film was a little cheesy, and there wasn't actually a lot of alternatives for Christian kids' entertainment. It really filled a need, definitely raised the bar in terms of the quality of Christian film, because those were pretty quality cartoons for the early 90s. There was just a lot of good mixture of both silliness and good moral lessons of how to be a good kid, but also teaching kids about God and the Bible. And so I think there was a really wide reach of both kids in Christian homes, but also kids outside of that as well because of the quality of the films. Between 1996 and 1999, their revenue went through the roof. You know, they're up to like $44 million franchise, which is crazy.
So what went wrong? How did the makers of the best-selling kids' video series in the world go bankrupt? Well, they took a couple of big swings that did not go well. One of the first signs that trouble was brewing for the business came when Phil tried to build a new headquarters for Big Idea Productions. And where should this booming animation studio put down their roots? Not New York, not L.A.
The village of Lombard is just 21 miles west of Chicago, with easy access to O'Hare and Midway International Airports, expressways, and regional...
I want to talk about Lombard, Illinois.
Oh, boy.
Tell me what your vision was for Lombard. It wasn't necessarily that the city you might think of as being, like, exciting and sexy and a great flagship. This was kind of a sleepy town, right?
Yeah, it's a small suburb west of Chicago. There was an old movie house, the DuPage Theater, that was a nationally registered historic place that was built in 1923, I think, that was half empty, kind of sitting there on the verge of falling apart. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, wouldn't it be great to save an old historic building, fill it with artists, young, fun artists, right walking distance from the train station so they can, if they want to live rural lives, they can go west from there. If they want to live urban lives, they can go east from there and live in Oak Park or Chicago. And fans could come and you could do tours, and then maybe you could add a restaurant or a store, and then maybe someday, you know, and then my mind starts going off in crazy directions and someone has to tie me down.
And so you made this announcement. You promised the city we're going to do this thing. We're going to revitalize.
Oh, yeah, of course. We had a groundbreaking. The Chicago Tribune attended. The mayor of Lombard was there wearing a Bob the Tomato tie and a shovel and a hard hat. And about 2 weeks after the groundbreaking, we finally got the full construction cost estimate in, which had taken a long time. And it was significantly higher than we thought. And at the same time, our bank had decided they wouldn't loan as much for us to do the project, which meant we didn't have the money. So just as we're breaking ground, literally about to start digging with the big, giant machines, we had to call the whole project off, had to call the mayor of Lombard in and say, we're sorry, but the whole thing has fallen apart. He said later that he went home that night and cried. So I thought, great, that's exactly was my plan for my life, was to make small town mayors cry because of my failed plans.
Was he still wearing the Bob the Tomato tie when you told him?
I hate to have to say this, but yes, he was. He put on his Bob the Tomato tie to come in for the meeting because he didn't know what he was walking into. And it just turned into a mess. I'm just sitting there thinking, okay, God, this is definitely not part of my plan.
So Lombard was a bust. And the next financial blow came from placing a huge bet on a risky venture. Their first full-length animated feature film.
Before Free Willy. The biggest fish story of all time. Big Ideas Jonah, a VeggieTales movie. Only in theaters 2002.
Holy mackerel!
It was based on the Bible story of Jonah and the whale. You know, that guy that was ignoring God and then got thrown into the sea and got swallowed? That one.
We had slowed down on our home video production in order to produce our first feature film. And kind of the story behind that is we really felt like we wanted to grow the company to be able to make more of a cultural impact. And, you know, feature films are a great way to do that. But at that time, no studio was going to bankroll a feature film with faith-based content.
So Big Idea Productions sank a ton of its own cash into making the animated feature film. And by the night of Jonah's premiere, you could say that the boat was taking on water.
So everyone who had worked on it, we flew everybody in, and we're having a premiere downtown Chicago at a big theater just for everyone who worked on the film and their kids and spouses. And then the next morning, we were doing a cruise on Lake Michigan for everybody as kind of the official wrap party. I was thanking everybody before the screening and fighting back tears because we'd already realized what trouble we were in and that the next morning I was going to have to lay off half of the studio. And it was just a profoundly bittersweet moment of trying to celebrate what all these people did, sacrificing so much and working so hard, at the same time knowing that it was the end. Kind of a funeral for a dream that you've been nursing and chasing. At that point, I think it was 14 years building toward that moment of making my first feature film, and then to have the celebration of that moment also be the funeral of that moment. It was brutally hard to stand up there and say, you know, hey, good job, everybody. Wait till you hear what I have to tell you tomorrow morning.
Man, that is not how movie premieres are supposed to go. And the movie actually did okay at the box office, just not well enough. It wasn't the final nail in the coffin for Big Idea Productions, though. That would get hammered in by a different culprit.
I love you, you love me, we're a happy family.
That's right. Bob the Tomato got taken to court by Barney the Dinosaur. Well, not exactly. It was Barney's parent company. But if you'd like to picture a somber tomato and a dinosaur wearing a suit in a courtroom, be my guest. The trouble started when Big Idea sold the VeggieTales distribution rights to Warner Brothers for $15 million. But Lyric, in addition to being Barney's parent company, had a pre-existing deal to distribute those videos. Lyric said, not so fast. You breached your contract. So Lyric sued Big Idea. And suddenly, it was Barney v. Bob the Tomato in federal court.
I had to spend 2.5 weeks sitting in a federal courtroom in Dallas, Texas. That's the jurisdiction that Barney the Dinosaur lived in.
Big Idea argued they had done nothing wrong, no contract violations. Now it was up to the jury to decide.
In my head, it was the moment where God would ride in and save the day. It's the dog food story, chapter 2.
Remember the dog food story? That was back when Phil was struggling to start VeggieTales. He was broke, like really broke, and spent his last $10 on dog food. Then he found a seemingly heaven-sent anonymous check. That story had become a bit of a legend at Big Idea.
One of our artists, actually, as the trial was going on a big whiteboard in one of our conference rooms, didn't write anything, just drew a giant bag of dog food and said, this is where we are. We're trusting on God to save the day. And he didn't. And I, you know, went in and sat down to hear the verdict, and the jury gave them everything they were asking for in damages, about $14 million in damages. It was completely clear that the company was done. There was no, you know, but if I hustle, I think I can. Nope, you're done. You're done hustling. There is nothing you can do. to save everything you've been working for. It's all dead.
Phil didn't just lose the company in bankruptcy. He lost the rights to the VeggieTales characters. Big Idea had put the intellectual property up as collateral on a bank loan. Phil had lost control of his creations. Bob and Larry got bought up by new owners. And Mike says that's what hit Phil the hardest.
That was a very, very difficult time. And, you know, each of us struggled with different things. I think Phil, you know, because he was much more the entrepreneur, he was leading the business. You know, for him, it was the loss of control of all of that. I remained with the company and continued to make VeggieTales.
I asked Phil if he ever blamed God.
I really didn't. What I gave up on was my certainty and my theology about what God would or wouldn't do. I thought, okay, you know, I've seen God show up enough in my life that I know he's real and he's active. So I'm very curious why he didn't show up here today.
Coming up.
We're over here by QWERTY the computer to talk about what we've learned today.
And so what we have learned
applies. What have we learned today?
God has a lot to say in his book.
Hey, it's Lee. If you're looking for a new podcast, check out Sick from WFYI and Side Effects Public Media in Indianapolis. In the 1970s and 80s, dozens of women went to a fertility clinic hoping to get pregnant. Decades later, their children uncovered the doctor's terrible secret. Reporters Lauren Bavis and Jake Harper take a hard look at the fertility industry, a doctor's abuse of power, and the lives he affected. Find Sick wherever you get your podcasts and find more info at sickpodcast.org. So, after the dust settled, what did this mean for Mike and Phil's friendship? This gangly 6'5" teenager and the goofy guy with the horn-rimmed glasses who first became best friends on their Bible college puppet team. Did the bankruptcy change your relationship with Phil at all?
You know, in some ways, yes. In some ways, it improved it because I think, you know, we were best friends going into business. And I think that has its advantages and disadvantages. And particularly since it wasn't an even pairing, Phil was definitely more, he ran more of the business side. And so, you know, there was tensions in our friendship by nature of being in business together that once the bankruptcy dissolved that business relationship, we could kind of go back to being friends again. And so, you know, now Phil and I get along great and, you know, we talk all the time and whenever I'm up in Chicago, we'll have dinner.
Is your faith different?
I don't know if it's different. I look back at my relationship with God, how I've believed about the world, and it's still where it was when I started. As a young Christian, you're much more sure about being right about everything, about your doctrine and everything. And then as you get older, you realize how much mystery there is in the world and how much you just want to leave a lot of room for God's mystery, for God's grace, and for God's mercy.
Is there a song or an episode that comes to mind for you because it's a lesson that you need repeated?
Probably the third or fourth VeggieTales episode I wrote and directed was Esther.
Our hero isn't a king, just an ordinary girl.
It's a story where God had called this girl, Esther, into a life that she had never imagined, you know, gave her this opportunity.
She wasn't born for greatness. She didn't go to school for it. She just learned that sometimes God has plans so big only he can see them. All she had to do was believe. Yup, she was just a regular kid, just like you.
I kind of come back to that. You know, God has put you here for such a time as this and to just be open to what God has for you. You know, you can make your own plans, but God will direct your paths.
Mike's path was to stay with the new Big Idea, working for the new owners in Nashville. Phil stayed in Chicago and struck out on his own, making new shows and writing books about the Bible for kids. But even as the characters passed from new owner to new owner over the last decade, Phil has never stopped doing the voice of Bob the Tomato.
I related at one point to the state comes and they take away your children and they put your children in foster care. But then the foster family calls and says, we don't really know what to do with these. Can you come and help? make the tomato do what he's supposed to do, but then leave because it's our tomato now. As I'm going through this growth process on the front end, it just makes me angry. You know, it's like, well, if you need me, then give me the tomato back. But then I realized more and more that, you know what, the tomato was never mine. It's God's tomato. Everything that I have because of God, and God can do whatever he wants with it. So what is the purpose of the tomato at this point in my life? And I realized that God was allowing me to stay involved with VeggieTales primarily for my own sustenance so that I could eat, so that I could have some money to invest in new ministry. And once I looked at it that way, that VeggieTales was no longer my ministry, but now my source of funding for new ministry, I thought, okay, what do you need Bob to do? I'll show up. And it became much easier.
For a long time, Phil thought he was supposed to be the Christian Walt Disney, destined for the kind of greatness that begets an empire of shows, toys, films, even theme parks. And this intense ambition caused problems for him spiritually. And he admits it even caused problems for the business, too.
So in many cases, it was people coming to me and saying, Phil, I think we're going too fast, or I think we're spending too much, or maybe we should slow down a little. And it was me saying,
well, yeah, me and the Lord, we got an understanding.
No way, man. I'm the Blues Brothers with my sunglasses on at night. I'm on a mission from God.
We're on a mission from God.
And I got a roll, man. This has to happen. And so it was me that was often vetoing more rational input to pursue, you know, what I felt was my God-given destiny, I think.
What was hard about trying to be both a boss, but then also inspirational to people who may have been drawn there for Christian values, mixing with employees that were not there for that?
Once it became successful, now every Christian animator in the country wanted to work at Big Idea. Where it became tricky is we still had our core team, which was mostly local Chicago art school kids. And now we were throwing in these really mature Christians who were very excited to work someplace Christian. And it became a bifurcated culture. And I didn't know how to put that together because the Christian artists coming in was like, when are we having Bible study? You know, when are we having prayer meeting? And then the non-Christian kids that I love just as much and were, you know, just as good artists were saying, wait, is that what this is? Wait, do I have to go to that? And it was really tough. So we tried to do things where, you know, we would say, all right, we're going to do a prayer meeting. Everyone can come. No one is compelled. No matter how far we went out of our way to say, you don't have to come. This is entirely optional. We would hear from people who were convinced that if I don't show up, I'm not going to get a raise. And there was nothing we could do to convince people otherwise. So in the end, we had some of our non-Christian artists leave saying, this is too much like a church now. We had a couple of our Christian artists leave saying, this isn't enough like a church. I managed to disappoint people on both ends.
Phil and Mike really considered VeggieTales as their ministry. For them, teaching kids that God loved them wasn't an afterthought. It was the whole point. That's why it stung so much when, a few years later, after the bankruptcy, NBC bought the rights to air old Veggie episodes and started scrubbing the religious references out of the show. Even the show's main message, its ending tagline,
God made you special and he loves you very much,
was turned into the uber-secular,
hey kids, thanks for coming to my house today. See you next week.
It upset Phil that NBC would not air the original episodes as is, but he wasn't surprised.
It was kind of a facepalm moment of, well, of course they can't. I was shocked when you said they could. So that was not a huge surprise. It was disappointing, but, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood.
The rights to the characters have been passed around quite a bit in recent years. Even in the Netflix version, Phil voiced the characters but didn't have any say in the script.
There have been three different owners of VeggieTales since the bankruptcy. Actually, maybe four. Classic Media, Entertainment Rights, which is a British company. Then Classic Media bought it back. Then Classic Media sold itself to DreamWorks. And then DreamWorks did a series with Netflix that they specifically did not want my help with. and that the fans did not like very much.
Maybe the saddest thing about all of this was that lawsuit with Lyric, that was eventually overturned. So there was some vindication there, but the company had already gone belly up. The damage was done. And Phil had learned a valuable lesson. He says he let the dream of VeggieTales get way too big, and he let it blind him from a much simpler and more satisfying approach to life. The idea inspired the name of his new company, Jellyfish Labs.
I needed to come up with a name for my new company, and I was looking for something that would remind me of what I'd learned. And the thing about jellyfish is they can't locomote. Whatever direction they're in, they can go a little bit in that direction, but they can't change directions. A jellyfish cannot change directions. So a jellyfish has to stay in the current and trust that the current will carry it where it needs to be, to find food, to escape predators, anything. It's just up to the current. And I realized that I had, spiritually, theologically, I was conceiving myself as a big studly barracuda. Like, okay, God, look at the amazing things I can do. Now, if you'll just bless me, then stand back and watch me go. And I realized, no, I'm not a big studly barracuda. I'm much closer to a brainless, spineless bag of goo that, as a follower of Jesus, I get my form, my purpose, my shape when I'm in the current of his will. And so I had to kind of reconceive myself away from this westernized, Americanized, individualistic, I can do great things because I have the power within me, to a much more historically Christian Orthodox point of view, I can do nothing apart from God.
And that's the mindset that Phil is bringing to the new VeggieTales show launching this fall. The first new episode is a Christmas special.
VeggieTales, the best Christmas gift.
Have we got a show for you?
It's set for release on the Trinity Broadcasting Network and DVD on October 22nd. Phil and Mike are voicing their characters again. And Phil's back in the writer's room for the first time in a long time.
What feels great is to go in and do the voices and their words that you wrote. You're like, yes, that is what Bob would say in this situation.
This new show is exciting because he's actually involved creatively. And so he's actually able to shape and develop the story.
That's Cara Bettis, the Christianity Today editor who grew up on the VeggieTales, and she says it's encouraging to fans of the original show to have Phil back in the mix again.
And so this new show's, you know, really exciting, I think, for some people who are now grown up. They grew up with VeggieTales, and now they get to be able to show their kids the same characters and the same storylines as they did. So I think that'll be a fun, you know, audience base of people who grew up with it. It's kind of like when the new Star Wars came out or something like that. And people were excited to see because they had grown up with them, had fond memories of them.
In the age of the internet, both fans and critics make themselves heard loud and clear. And VeggieTales can't please everyone, of course. Just recently, Phil mentioned in an interview with an online magazine that he wasn't a fan of the way another kid's show, Arthur on PBS, had handled showing a gay wedding. That got written up in a bunch of clickbaity headlines, which got picked up online by the left and the right, and resulted in a tornado of angry tweets. Well, Phil had made those comments after we'd done our interviews, but I wanted to give him a chance to tell you how he felt in more than 140 characters. So I called him up. He was outside a cafe when we talked.
You do expect for LGBT representation to start showing up in kids' shows. It's the cultural direction right now. But when it first shows up, especially in a show for young kids, as a producer, I never want to put myself in between a parent and their kids and try to give their kids a message that their parents wouldn't agree with.
And remember, Phil's working on the show again, yeah, but he's not the CEO anymore. And so he doesn't get to unilaterally decide what goes in or what stays out of a VeggieTales script. But I asked if it was up to him. Does he know how he would approach LGBT representation?
Heck no. My feeling is it would be like trying to address women ordination in a children's video. Absolutely, you're guaranteed to lose half your audience regardless of which way you go. There are going to be a whole variety of positions within. There are affirming churches, unaffirming churches, you know, churches in between. There's a continuum of reactions within churches. And to try to come up with one statement that works for young children of all of those traditions would be very near impossible.
The interesting thing to me is, like, so you create this kids show that teaches morality, but do you have to have a healthy distance between what you, Phil, think and what kind of the philosophy of the show is?
Yeah, my job is not necessarily to make everyone think like I think or to present my point of view. My job is to present my understanding of the Orthodox Christian position. I would refer to it as centrist evangelical Christianity.
That wasn't the first time VeggieTales had stirred up some controversy online. In 2018, a college student from California State University in San Marcos argued that some of the Veggie characters had racially insensitive accents, and that the show often gave those accents to characters who were villains. That class assignment went viral, and Phil says the way the show handles voices now has changed a lot since they started.
You know, it's similar to the Muppets. When the Muppets started out, it was just a small group of guys that had to do all the voices, so they had to see how far they could push to do different voices, and that's how it was with Mike and I in VeggieTales. Suddenly the world changes and you have to go back and think, wait a minute, is it appropriate that I'm doing all those voices? Which voices am I allowed to do and which voices am I not allowed to do? The rules have become a little confusing. So DreamWorks first set the rule internally that any ethnic voice needed to be done by a person of that ethnicity. That's the new world, and we just have to figure out how to make it work.
This issue is not unique to VeggieTales' back catalog, by the way. Looney Tunes doesn't quite hold up either, and The Simpsons have been scolded for their Indian character, Apu. So 2019 is a very different landscape than when the VeggieTales started more than two decades ago. But their goal is still the same, teaching biblical morals to little kids with a wacky cartoon. Faithful fans, pun intended, will likely enjoy these new episodes. This time around, there'll be more about Jesus and the Gospels, too. Because unlike NBC, Trinity Broadcasting Network does not shy away from religion. And even in today's crowded media landscape, I think it's fair to say,
there's never, ever, ever, ever been a show like VeggieTales. There's never, ever, ever, ever been a show like VeggieTales. It's time for VeggieTales.
That's it for Preach. Thanks for listening. But before we go, one more thing. Now it's time for Silly Songs with you. The part of the show where you, dear listener, sing a silly song. Thanks to everyone who shared a rendition of their favorite VeggieTales songs. Let's start with Cara Bettis, Associate Features Editor of Christianity Today.
I can remember the lines. Oh, where is my hairbrush? Oh, where is my hairbrush? And then he goes, oh, where? And then he goes really high, and I can't go that far.
Where is my hairbrush?
Awesome.
No hair
for my hairbrush.
No hair.
Thanks for listening to Preach. This show is a production of KUER and PRX.
It's good to know how much you love me. It's true. The Bible says you do.
We have a newsletter. Find the sign-up link at preachpod.org.
If a squash can make you smile, if you like to walk with potatoes up and down the produce aisle, have we got a show for you. Veggie Shells.
Be our friend on Twitter. We're at PreachPod, and we want to hear more about your own VeggieTales memories and what you think of the new show once it comes out.
Whoa, I love the bunny. I don't love my soup. Oh, my bread, just the bunny.
This show is produced by me, Lee Hale, and Trisha Bobita. This episode was mixed by Anya Zizik. Our digital producer is Chelsea Naughton.
I'm so blue, I don't know what to do. I'm so blue.
Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. Special thanks this week to Tim Slover, Roddy Nickpour, and Colin McNulty.
A one, a two, a one, two, three, four. Cheeseburger, please do not get angry. He'll eat and be back here for lunch.
If you're a fan of the show, I'll say it again. It really helps us if you leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Be like Donut1234, there's a lot of numbers here, who said, thank you, this is the podcast I've been looking for. I'm so glad someone is doing this. These are very important questions to wrestle with. I agree, Donut. Thank you very much.
Oh, lovely cheeseburger, be back for you. Oh, he'll be back for you. The best part of this song is the narrative arc about just, you know, a young squash who wants to eat a cheeseburger.